A really solid, fun little ghost story. A perfect kind of Sunday night watch, I think, on like a dreary October evening. Like, if it's rain's lashing outside, close the curtains, light a candle, watch the others. It's a pretty solid choice, I think.
I think it's a really well-crafted ghost story. So I was glad to revisit it. And it is one of those ones that you're like, oh yeah, the others. Yeah, it's got that. Why some people like... suggest it more or talk about it a bit more.
I mean, Nicole's just so watchable always. This is not news. And I think you've given just about enough hints as you go to keep you intrigued.
Hello and welcome to Flicks Watcher. Here today we have Kobe.
Hello.
Laura.
Hi.
And Lillian.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about The Others.
The Others.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. Our guests today are Laura and Lillian. Over to you, please, Lillian, to introduce yourself and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are.
Hello, I'm Lillian Crawford. I'm a freelance writer and journalist, mostly writing about films, but also other forms of art and theatre and things like that. BBC Culture, Little White Lies, Empire, Sight and Sound, Plinth, various different places where I write. You can find all my stuff on my website if you Google me, I guess. Yeah.
You have an autism film podcast.
I do. I have an autism film podcast. Nearly forgot to mention it. I have two podcasts. I have one called Listen to Lillian, which is all about British cinema. Hopefully doing some more recordings of that soon. And I'm also a co-host of the Autism Through Cinema podcast, where we talk about films which resonate with some of us who are autistic, some people who are scholars of autism, looking at how films can resonate with neurodivergent audiences.
So it's about how people on the autistic spectrum resonate with film, and the films that resonate with more than other ones.
Exactly.
Because I mean, a recent classic was the Guardians of the Galaxy, where Tracks the Destroyer.
We haven't talked about Guardians of the Galaxy. Maybe that's a good one to do. We've talked about lots of films. I think the first one I chose was Amelie.
Oh, and, really? Of course, I can see that.
Yeah, because I really strongly connect with that character. Things like some of Wes Anderson's films, Moonrise Kingdom, was one we did recently. Mm-hmm. But Guardians of the Galaxy is a good suggestion. We should do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, who are you?
Hello, my name's Laura Venning. I'm also a freelance film writer, critic, occasionally dabbling in things like literature, but mostly film, writing for places like BBC Culture, Little White Lies, Curzon, various other places here and there, mostly about period dramas and queer cinema.
How do you pick the genres you talk about? Or do people almost like pigeonhole you as a writer?
Well, I think people do notice if you're interested in something and you've written about it, you will be potentially picked out to pursue those things, which is lovely. You know, I'm not complaining. I mean, those are where my interests lie, I guess, sure, in terms of my own identity as a queer person. And I think also growing up, I know Lillian feels similarly because we've talked about it before, that I find period dramas just a really interesting view of what Britain is, like a false version of what Britain was. There's like a really interesting intersection of like false nostalgia and a kind of reverence for the past. But how's that communicated in the present? I just find it a really fascinating genre that a lot of people write off as being inherently not interesting. I'm like, yeah, a lot of those films are bad, but they are interesting. They say something interesting about the country that we live in or the country we thought we once lived in. There's just a lot to get into there, and I should stop talking about it now because I could go on and on.
The country we live in, which is interesting at the moment. Anyway.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Let's not go there.
So Laura, you chose and brought the others to us. Can you tell us, first of all, why you chose it? And then I'll get the timer up and you all have 60 seconds to give us your synopsis.
Okay, well, I chose this for a couple of reasons. One, because at the time of recording, it's nearly Halloween. I wanted something spooky. I love a ghost story. And I'd never seen this, actually. I chose it without having seen it, which was perhaps an edgy move. But I just thought, you know what? I bet this is a lot of fun and I bet there's plenty to chew on. I also have a very distinct memory. This film came out in 2001 and I would have been 8 at the time. Yes. And I really remember seeing the poster for this film everywhere, which is like this completely dark black poster with Nicole Kidman holding a like gas lamp and looking very nervous. And I remember seeing this all over the tube and it's just this very evocative image. So I just sort of thought it's finally time to find out what's going on with Nicole and that lamp.
Okay, synopsis timer starts now.
Okay, so The Others is the story of Grace Stewart, who lives in a remote mansion that's always surrounded by mist. And we're at the tail end of World War II. We're at the very end of World War II. She lives there with her two young children who have a life-threatening allergy to sunlight. So the house is dark all the time. We assume her husband has died away in the war. We don't really know what's happened to him. The children start to overhear ghosts in the house or intruders. We don't quite know what's going on. And as the mystery gets even more frightening, Grace, played by Nicole, starts to unravel mentally. Ooh, spooky.
Fair enough. So do you think it lived up to your choice? Are you glad you picked it for this now?
Yeah, I am. It's one that, I mean, I remember being like really well received at the time or like really talked about. I think probably because also that moment, 2001, was kind of peak Nicole Kidman. I feel like she was really at her height of her powers in those early noughties. But I was also kind of aware that like this film isn't really talked about that much now as this like, I don't know, either hidden gem or like masterpiece that everyone loves. So I sort of, it was like, oh yeah, this didn't quite meet my expectations or certainly didn't exceed my expectations, but it was still a really solid, fun little ghost story, a perfect kind of Sunday night watch, I think, on like a dreary October evening. Like if it's rain's lashing outside, close the curtains, light a candle, watch The Others. It's a pretty solid choice, I think.
Had you seen it before, Helen or Lillian? Guess yourself, Lillian.
No, I hadn't.
Oh, wow.
It's surprisingly, and I'd also somehow managed to go my entire life without finding out the twist of this film, which is apparently some feat, because apparently I know it's a very famous twist, but I have managed to always avoid the spoilers around the film. Like Laura, my knowledge of this film consisted of Nicole Kidman holding a lamp, and that was about it. But I was very excited to see it because I knew that it was sort of in the same vein as something like Henry James's Turn of the Screws, sort of governess horror, I guess. That kind of big haunted house, Shirley Jackson gothic that Netflix is very fond of, having done two series now, The Haunting of Hill House and Haunting of Bly Manor, in quite a similar vein to this one. Maybe they'll turn this story into a 10-hour version, who knows? But yeah, that's sort of the position I was coming from with it. So I was looking forward to it, but did not know much at all. So yeah.
Did it live up to you, any expectations you had on it?
Yeah. Well, I don't think I had any expectations except beyond the fact that I know I like this kind of ghost story.
Sure.
The Innocents is probably the best film of that genre, Jacques Clayton's adaptation of Turn of the Screw. And I think that this doesn't quite reach that, but it comes pretty close. It's a really gorgeous looking film. Nicole is sensational, and incredibly hot with that shotgun. Oh my God. And that was enough to sort of get it through. And then the twist comes and I was like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. And that never happens to me. I always see the twist coming. It's like Sixth Sense. I was like watching it as a child and was like, huh, I see where this is going. The others, no, did not dawn on me for a moment what was actually going on. So I know you said that we can spoil things, but I really don't want to.
You can spoil away. Honestly, generally, spoil away. Helen can spoil.
I don't want to say it.
Have you seen it before, Helen?
I have, yeah. I mean, I feel like a dinosaur. I saw this at the cinema and really, 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 really loved it. I thought it was great. Thought it was really atmospheric. Like, I thought Nicole Kidman's kind of like icy English lady was brilliant. And yeah, and when I watched it, I was very much like, where is this going? What is happening? What is... And yeah, it had me as well. I was like, oh, that's clever. I'm quite happy with not spoiling it. And I'm glad that it still works being viewed now, because I was wondering a bit like, oh, was I just a bit naive back in 2001 and just not really seen many films and was a bit kind of gullible? But having watched it again, I'm a bit like, the clues are there. From the very start, there's a line. I was like, oh, there we go.
What's the line? Give people a bit of a breadcrumb, even though we do say spoilers, so you can say whatever you want.
I don't know. I kind of feel like, I guess, like, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it for the fun. Do you want me to say the line? I don't know.
Say the line. I don't know which line you're talking about, so I'm intrigued here.
Well, it's like about...
If it's at the beginning of the film, it's not going to give it away.
Yeah, I mean, there's a character at the very, very start, and it's very quietly said, and the quote is, I imagine he's dead like all the rest.
Okay, that does give it away.
I was going to say.
Maybe you can, like, edit that bit out. And I was like, oh, yeah. And it's like, there is little breadcrumby bits. There's like a really, it's just really cleverly done, and there's lots of like creepy old-timey things about having photos taken of the dead, and that kind of comes back a few times. And there's the ongoing thing with the doors being locked and unlocked, and the curtains being open and closed. And there's not a lot actually happens apart from kind of like bump in the night type noises. And I think it does really well to kind of sustain that suspense without actually showing too much, which I feel is probably a little bit of a lost art these days. But yeah, I think it's a really well-crafted ghost story. So I was glad to revisit it. And it is one of those ones that you're like, oh yeah, the others. Yeah, it's got that. Why don't people like suggest it more or talk about it a bit more? I think like in terms of like the Nicole, I think this was like, was it just, I think it came out just before she announced the split. It was definitely... when she was working on it, it was like,
well,
the
I noticed
last
maybe you
film.
Did as well, that it was like exec produced by Tom Cruise, and I was like, oh, this must be at the tail end.
The last
of
film,
that.
Yeah.
I
think they'd broken up by the time it came out, or at least very, very, very close.
Yeah, I'd never seen this before. And I think it's one of those films where sometimes the name just isn't that interesting, not the others. But I know it's a lot of people do quote it and say, yeah, it's a good film you should watch. So I think it's just only the fact it never crossed my mind at the time I was interested in watching this kind of film. I hadn't seen it before. So, you know, thanks, Laura, for bringing it to the table. You know, I didn't know Christopher Eccleston was going to be in it for a start. So there's lots of hidden bits in there.
Keith Allen?
Yep, Keith Allen. I mean, I think there's a lot of unpeeling of the onion all the way through, which is really interesting. One which I don't think will be too spoilerific will be those housekeepers that turn up at the start, and then Nicole Kidman's character is like, actually, I just realized I didn't put an advert in the paper. How did you know about this? And then they find out, you know, they say they just stumbled across the house, and then in a further conversation she finds out that they'd worked at the house previously, and that's those kind of levels of creepiness just kind of build up. That's kind of subtle creepiness builds up and builds up. Chris Eccleston comes back in a weird way. And you're like, where is this going? One of the questions I asked before we went into the record is kids in horror films. Because I think the girl in this was particularly creepy, I thought.
Yeah, I was thinking of it kind of like a counterpoint to, well, I mean, obviously I was also thinking about The Innocents, the classic 1960s film, which also features two children in a very creepy house. Although in that story, it's the little boy, Miles, who's really the sort of, God, how to even describe it? He's sort of more connected with the other dark world, whatever you want to call it. He's sort of more supernaturally sort of charged and he's more of a threat. Whereas in this film, it's Anne, who's just, I mean, she's a real little terror and you just don't quite know what's going on with her, what's going on inside her head. I realized thinking about this, I mean, just how many classic horror films do feature children. I'm not a huge horror like person, really, not that knowledgeable, but even thinking about things like, I mean, obviously you've got films like The Exorcist where a child is essentially the protagonist, but then even in films like The Shining, you have the flash of the twins, you have Danny, in a way is the protagonist, sort of, actually. And they're just everywhere. You know, Rosemary's Baby, not that you really see Babadook. The titular baby there, the Babadook. Night of the Living Dead, of course, famously. Yeah, The Omen. See, I've never seen The Omen.
Poltergeist.
Yeah. A lot of things
Halloween.
No, you're right.
Kids are creepy, man.
Yeah. Oh, Village of the Damned. That was the other one I was going to say. There's a whole band of them in Village of the Damned. You can't get
Children
away.
Children of the Corn.
Yeah, God. What is it creepy kids? Is it that we don't know what kids are thinking? They're like us, but they're smaller. It's like an Uncanny Valley thing. What's going on? Yeah.
Have you seen the Orphan films, which the latest one came out, which is a bizarre film because the same girl who played her, like, in 2009 is still playing her now as someone who looks like a 9-year-old, which is hilarious.
Isn't she like 30? Isn't that the twist?
Yeah, it's really funny. And the way they shoot it's really funny. But it's like the horror that comes from a film like Orphan is that it's like adult behaviors in a child, like a 9-year-old with like a sexuality and like a revenge plot or whatever. And it's like, I guess that's kind of the idea, is that it's like children saying and doing things that an adult would do. Because as you say, Anne is really quite horrible. But there's also this sort of gesturing towards another child that you don't know is there. I think the scene when sort of, what's the brother called? I forget.
Nicholas, I think. Yeah.
Nicholas, when he's in the bed and she's sort of saying that Victor is in the room with them and then it touches him. That was one of the high points of tension, I think. Maybe it's because I'm the kind of mean older sister who would definitely do that to my younger brother. And it's like, oh,
I would have
100%
done it to my younger sister too. I would have absolutely. It's what being an older sibling is. You gotta do it.
You gotta terrify them. It's kind of not nice when you see it being done like that. It's like, oh no, I was a bit of a bitch as a child. Okay.
I thought she's particularly good. I don't know. I was trying to work out if she did the other voice as well, or if it was like dubbed on afterwards. But if she did, then I thought it was pretty phenomenal how she worked two kind of voices at the same time. Maybe I'm just not giving young actors enough kudos to do so. But I thought, you creep me out, kid. Well done.
I always rate like good acting by children, whether you find them annoying or convincing. So like, I definitely found these two convincing rather than annoying.
Is there anything else you guys want to say before we head on to the scores?
I was just going to say that the score is by the director, Alejandro Amenábar, and it's gorgeous. It's a really, really gorgeous score.
I was gonna say, because this is something, a thought that did occur to me at some point, which was, do we think that the children's photosensitive allergy thing, which means they have to keep the curtains shut, do we think that's real in the context of the story? Or do we think that's the mother's kind of slightly unhinged delusion, because the film doesn't really give you an answer either way.
I mean, I also wondered if it was because it looks really cool.
Like, well, yeah, that's a very valid reason, but I wondered if
cinematography is really gorgeous. But I think it's because, like, I suppose it's just a massive hint that they're actually not, they are ghosts, and that if the sun, that they can't be seen in sunlight, I guess.
I suspect that if you
I'm sure there's another film with that condition in it about photosensitivity, but I can't think of it. I'm not thinking of Twilight.
Oh, it's funny you bring up Twilight, because the cinematographer for this film, I looked him up, he did New Moon and he did Eclipse. And the last film he did...
Twilight vibes.
The last film he did was Lyle Crocodile. So the guy's doing really well.
What
he's
a
made
CV.
It to Hollywood. He's got a fascinating CV. I would look him up. I can't recall his name right now, but he's had a very interesting career. But yeah, it makes sense he did the Twilight films, though, or at least two of them,
yeah.
You know, the number two and number three. Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Well, with that, guys, let's head to the scores.
You're listening to a Stripped Media podcast. It might be discussing film, TV, cakes, even dogs.
Possibly all four.
Very possibly. But only one show on the network focuses on the musical medium, and that show is Song by Song.
Yeah, Song by Song is a podcast that discusses the music of Tom Waits, the gravelly-voiced singer, whose work we think is more than worth your time. And to be honest, we wouldn't have spent literally years making this podcast if we didn't think that was true.
Probably not. Every week, we take some of his music, we share it with a variety of guests from different backgrounds and disciplines, and we discuss how it works and how it makes us feel.
Our latest season is listening to the compilation of covers and rarities called Orphans, which is over 60 songs of his music. So amongst that, there's probably going to be something that will pique your interest.
So once you've finished this current episode you're listening to, why not type Song by Song into your podcast app and join us for a track or two.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we'll start with you, please, Laura, with your recommendability.
I think I'd give this a pretty solid 4. You know, I understand that this is probably going to be a bit slow for some people and a bit... I don't know. I don't see many horror films, new horror films out in the cinema, like mainstream Hollywood ones, but I know that they're stuffed with jump scares and plenty of kind of thrills and chills. And this isn't really that at all. So I don't know if it would play to anyone who really likes that kind of thing. But on the other hand, I sort of think a wide variety of people would enjoy this, and it's very gripping. So yeah, I'd give it a 4.
Lillian.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is a 4. If you like haunted house horror films, who doesn't? This is a solid entry in the genre, I would say.
Helen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that it's kind of resonated watching it now, because I did wonder how it would be to watch this now, because it feels a lot older than it is, even though obviously it is quite a few years old. It does kind of feel very... kind of almost like 1940s, maybe, kind of ghosty haunted house kind of movie. So yeah, I mean, I would recommend it. I mean, I'm surprised you all haven't seen it. So there are obviously people who haven't seen it. So if you haven't seen it and you've got this far and you're still thinking, yeah, I'm going to watch it, even though I kind of vaguely know what's going on and may or may not know the twist, then absolutely 100% watch it. And yeah, I'll give it 4 as well. I don't think it's going to be for everyone, but if you like kind of gothic-y horror, then this one's one for you.
I'm going to go for 3.5 here. Yeah, I mean, definitely watch it. It is a slower burn, and I think when it gets a small screen score, I'll explain a bit more there. Repeat viewing score, Laura.
Well, this is a tricky one, because repeat viewing when a film has a big twist at the end, it's just inherently a bit of a difficult one. On the other hand, of course, with any film that when there's a twist, you do get renewed enjoyment from revisiting it and putting the pieces together again, Helen said. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think this is one where a few years down the line, I would revisit, but with enough of a gap to kind of forget some of its little tricks. So I think probably overall a 3. I think that's how it balances out for me.
Lillian.
Yeah, I completely agree that this is probably a 3. I mean, my immediate instinct when it finished was to watch it again, but then I probably would never watch it again after that. So it's going to be a sort of one more to spot the threads that you were talking about, Helen, about sort of seeing it later, knowing how it progresses. So yeah, I think a 3 is a solid rating there.
Do you think I've never actually done this? But there must be discussion points, blog posts, articles about the hints that reveal the twist at the end. Would you watch alongside or would you try and do it again by yourself and then go to some kind of article?
Oh, always by myself. Yeah. That's part of the fun.
I agree.
Helen?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I watched it again, but it was nowhere near the experience that I had the first time. And going into it, I was really looking forward to watching it again because I did enjoy it. And I think it's a great performance and it's very atmospheric, but it definitely did lose quite a bit on the rewatch. And it is that the breadcrumbs are, you're a bit like, I almost questioned my kind of buying into it the first time round. Cause I was like, really they're saying that, like, I don't know, 2.5 down the middle. I'm not sure. It's just cause it was a massive gap from seeing it now that I rewatched it.
Yeah. I'm going to get 2.5 as well. And we talked about The Sixth Sense, Lillian. Obviously, not going to give the twist there. But I'm sure when they reveal the twist in Sixth Sense, they do like a bit of a flashback to the scenes where it uncovers it. And I always kind of think that kind of spoils it a bit. It spoils it for the rewatch factor for people.
There's just less... in case you didn't get it, here's some illustrations.
Yeah.
The thing with Sixth Sense, though, is that like it literally happens in the first scene of the film.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it tells you what happened. And it's, as you say, you see it again at the end. It's like, don't you forget that that's how this film began. It doesn't do that in this film. It's much subtler, I think, which is what I appreciated.
Small screen score, Laura.
Well, yeah, again, I've only seen this on a small screen. I think it's very good on a small screen. I mean, I watched, for various reasons, I initially was on the big TV with the good sound and then had to switch to my laptop in bed. And I found it very effectively creepy in both settings. you know, obviously most films do benefit from a big screen, but there is something about sort of huddling up like in bed or wherever with a laptop very close to you with a spooky film on that really hits. Maybe because it's somehow the film physically feels close to your body because it's on a laptop on your lap. Something about that. With good headphones, it's still a really enjoyable time. So yeah, I'd give this a 4, I think.
Yeah, Lillian?
I think that I would agree. This is very much a sort of chamber piece, I guess, and it feels very claustrophobic, which benefits from watching it on a TV. Watch it of an evening with the lights off or low. It does create a certain atmosphere that you don't necessarily get in a cinema. So yeah, I'd probably go fairly high and say a 4 on the small screen one.
Yeah, you're not allowed Helen. To light candles at home in the cinema, are you? So you can watch it by
no,
candlelight at
exactly.
home, which is so much nicer.
Helen.
Yeah, I mean, 2001, I probably saw this in the Cineworld in Burton-on-Chent, so it's hardly the most glamorous similar experience. I think this is actually quite a nice home watch. Obviously, I would try and make it as dark as possible, and yeah, candles are a good idea. Obviously, use candles safely. And I think it benefits from being kind of like quite claustrophobic. So yes, I think it's fine on small screen, actually. So yeah, a 5. I don't think it's going to come back to the cinema, so you're not going to be able to see it big.
Actually, I believe that the BFI, sorry to interrupt, but I believe that the BFI is actually re-releasing this, funnily enough, this October or this November as part of their new season of horror. So oddly enough, even though you're right, it doesn't seem like the kind of film that returned to cinemas, it actually is. So
it is,
there you
yeah.
go. If you fancy it, I think it is going to be around the UK over the next few months. But yeah, it is surprising.
There you go. Knock yourself out at the cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd quite like to have seen this in a cinema. I think, I'm not sure, I know I'm not going to watch it on the rewatch because there's so many things in the cinema I want to watch right now, but I don't have the time to. So a reissue is lower on the pecking order. But I think the sense of atmosphere and being enveloped by the story pay dividends in the cinema. And it does look nice. It does look really nice. So engagement score, Laura.
I think, again, I'll go for a 4. It takes a little while to get to its conclusion. I think there's a little bit of meandering in the kind of second and third act. But in general, I think it is just really engaging, really fun. I mean, Nicole's just so watchable always. This is not news. And I think you're given just about enough hints as you go to keep you intrigued, even though things do meander slightly, like I say, as the film draws to a close.
So what was your score, sorry?
Oh, sorry, I said four.
Four. Lillian?
Yeah, I think visually it was very engaging, as you say, and I certainly, my interest certainly peaked towards the end when I sort of started to realise what was going on. I think there was a bit in the middle. I think it was after, I mean, surprisingly, given how much I love Christopher Eccleston, I think around it did sort of sag a bit in the middle for me after a very strong and compelling start. So I think I'm going to go a bit lower and go for a 3.5 on engagement.
You guys were neck and neck until that point. I wanted to see if we did a clean sweep.
Just agree on everything.
Helen.
Yeah, I agree. It's an hour and 44 minutes and it just about sustains it for that. But there is a bit of a moment where it suddenly you just want to like, come on, I want to get to the thing that I don't really know is happening, but you're going to give me a good reveal. And it just takes a little bit longer to get there. But yeah, it's still very entertaining, so a four for me.
Yeah, it was a bit of a slow burn, and this is part of the disbenefit, if that's a word, of watching something in home viewing. You can kind of switch off and try and pick up again later. So I think I did this in three sittings. So yeah, I obviously wasn't fully engaged, or I was just too tired. So I'm going to go for three here. And that gives us an overall score of 3.59375.
Specifically,
all right.
Decent.
It's all right. Guys, thank you so much for joining. Thank you for bringing a film you hadn't seen before, Laura. A wild gamble, I'm sure. I think Helen's referred that to before. Maybe we need to come up with a name for it, Helen, for when people bring on films they've not seen before as their choice. And then at least you can't be too disappointed if it's taken poorly. In this podcast, I guess. You can't be too emotionally attached to it.
No, exactly. I wouldn't have been too heartbroken if you'd all hated it, although I would have been sad that I would have inadvertently made you sit through something you did not enjoy. So I'm glad everyone did at least enjoy it.
Yeah. So Laura and Lillian, can you tell everyone where we can find you online as a reminder? And then we'll say goodbye to listeners. We'll go to yourself first, Laura.
You can find me on Twitter at Laura_Benning. And you can also find my writing on laurabenning.com, my little website where I just have my portfolio and ways to contact me.
Lillian.
Likewise, you can find me on Twitter at Lil Croft and my website, which is www.lilcroft.com, where I have all of my various writings and things. You can also find the Autism Through Cinema podcast and the Listen to Lillian podcast on whatever podcast streaming service you're currently listening on.
Excellent. Thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.